Maybe you saw this week a little video that we put out, and we're doing a little contest this morning. Maybe you saw it on Facebook or Instagram, but if you didn't, we're doing a little contest this morning, and that is that there will be two questions that if you are able to answer, and I would hope that you are, they're not difficult. But if you're able to answer them after the end of this message and you enter that answer on the comment section underneath the video on Facebook or on Instagram, this week you'll get delivered to your house a box of a dozen donuts from Dunkin' Donuts. All right, so be listening, and we will choose at random two winners tomorrow, Lord willing, and you'll have those in hand as soon as possible. The two questions are, what two commands does God give to Joshua? And the second question is, what are the six characters that we look at during the course of this message? I should also mention that if you have your app, the notes for this message are available there, and you can utilize that if that's something that you want to do today. I'm glad that you're here. We want to jump into our message this morning, but before we do, be able to get that up, Riney. Yeah, take a look at this picture. I came across this picture this week. This is a trip to the dentist in 1892. A tough day, right? And maybe some of you feel like that was your week. I feel like that was my morning. And I think that maybe if you looked at that, you'd think, well, that's pretty descriptive of 2020. Sometimes we go through really challenging times in a variety of ways, and this has nothing to do with the message, but some of the ways that we can feel and situations we can find ourselves in, and yet the Lord is faithful to us. And so we want to look at this story this week as we jump into this story of Joshua. Let me begin by asking you the question, when you think of Joshua, what do you think of? And I'm not talking about the individual, the man, but the book. When you read this week, if you read your chapter, what do you think of? You can respond to me. What are some things that you think of when you think of the book of Joshua?
Leadership.
Leadership.
God at work.
God at work. War, okay. Anything else?
Obedience.
Okay, obedience.
Jericho.
Jericho, yeah. Okay, walls coming down. It's a book that is filled with great stories, amazing feats, tremendous pathos. There's a lot in the book. And in one sense, it's a very easy book in the sense of organization. And I want to give you just a very brief history about this story. The message this morning is entitled, How Our Choices Make or Break Us. And we want to start off just by looking. You can see this map. Sometimes just seeing a map can help a little bit, but the book is very easy in the sense of its organization. Chapters 1 through 12 describe the campaigns, the war conquest that actually took place. And you can see this is where they started, right over here on the east side of the Jordan River. They had traveled up this way, okay, and they're right here. And they do two things in their campaign. Number one, they split the country right in half, and they conquer Jericho and Ai, and then the early part of chapters 1 through 12, describe the southern campaign, and the latter chapters of 8 through 12 describe the northern campaign. And it's just very simple. The book is very straightforward. If you read it, in fact, I took the time to read the whole book in the fuller version in the scriptures, and read the whole thing all the way through. And this very easy to describe what took place. The second thing that happened in the second half of the book, in Joshua 13 through 22, is the description of how the land got divided up. And so here you can see a picture of all of the tribes and their land allotments. And so in chapters 13 through 22 just describes how that process took place and where they went. And you can see Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh are all on the east side. That was a decision that they made, and they negotiated with Moses before Moses died that they wanted to stay on this side of the Jordan. And then after the conquest, all the land on the left-hand side or on the east side of the Jordan got divvied up, and that's how Israel became its land allotments. And the book is so very easy. It's chapters 1 to 12 describe the battles. Chapters 13 to 22 describe where each group, family, clan, tribe was given land and where they settled. And then the latter chapters, 23 and 24, talk about the end of Joshua's life. So in one sense, it's a very easy book. In another sense, it's a very difficult book. The contents of the book are challenging as you read it, especially for us. And there's lots of questions that come up that arise in this book, especially questions about the rightness of the conquest, the command of God to go into all of these cities and to kill and annihilate everything, to leave nothing alive. Three times we are told that the Lord said that the reason for the result of this conquest was that had nothing to do with the righteousness of Israel as a nation, but everything to do with the sin of the people who lived in this region during the time right before the conquest. And so there's a lot of difficulty about the book in terms of its content and in terms of what took place. And of course, the upper story, we've tried to use this little thing here, the upper story of this book is that God has been picked a family, established a nation, and he promised that nation that he would bless them and that through them blessing would come to all the earth. He promised them that part of this process would be the possession of this land. And so now he's brought them out of slavery into the land, and this establishment of this geographic border would be the place, the incubation of God's ongoing work to bring about this ultimate person who would be, as in Deuteronomy it says, a prophet like Moses, who would deliver his people out of slavery, not slavery from Egypt, but slavery, an ultimate kind of slavery, the slavery of sin and death, that there would come a prophet from this group of people, and he would be a prophet like Moses, and he would ultimately deliver his people out of slavery and death and into the promised land of God's presence, the promised land of rest in relationship with God. And that's the ultimate upper story that's happening. But Joshua is in large part a book about choices. And I want to talk to you today about the subject of choices. There are many choices that we make that in reality have very, very little consequence on our lives. For example, whether or not you eat peas or beans at lunch today is going to make very little difference in the outcome of your life. Whether or not you choose to wear blue jeans or black jeans makes very little difference or consequence to your life. But other decisions that we make, other choices that we make, have dramatic consequences for us, have long-lasting impact. Those of you who are married know that the choice of the person that you marry will have a dramatic influence on your life. And if you're not married, you need to know that. For those of you who know that what you do with Jesus has dramatic implications for your life in this world and in the world to come. So some choices, very little consequence. Other choices, very, very serious implications. And what I want to do today is share with you very briefly 6 moments of decision in this book, 6 choices that dramatically affected the lives of the people in the book of Joshua. And we're going to look at these 6 people you can see up here: Joshua, Achan, Rahab, Caleb, Jesus, and the people. Start with Joshua. Of course, this will be very brief as we make our way through each one. Let's start with Joshua. There were 2 commands that God gave, that the Lord gave to Joshua, that are worthy of our attention. Anybody know them right offhand? Huh? Be strong and courageous. Anyone know the other one? Do not let the law of the Lord, the book of the law, depart from your mouth. Great. All right. Those of you who look in the contest, you're quickly writing that down, aren't you? All right. Now, think with me briefly about these 2. First, be strong and courageous. Joshua was told no less than 4 times to be strong and courageous. Now, why do you think he was told that many times? Well, I was thinking about this, and why does God repeat this? 4 times Joshua gets told this, twice at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, twice in the book of Joshua. Be strong and courageous. And there were a lot of barriers that Joshua was facing. And I took a moment to try to think of like a short list of his to-do list. And here, let's see this. So here's Joshua's to-do list, okay? Number 1, lead these people. Now, Joshua was second in command. Moses was the leader. And for 40 years, I can imagine Joshua saying, you know, I've been observing what's been going on about leading these people. And, you know, I'm not so sure I really want to do that. Okay, number 1, lead these people. Number 2, cross the Jordan River at flood stage. All right, think about the reality of that. Flood stage, large this river to cross, 3 million people, all animals, all the kids, all the infants, all the everything that had to get across that river safely. All right, cross the Jordan River, okay? Number 3, conquer and wipe out all the Canaanites. All right, get across the river into enemy territory. Nobody there are our friends, okay? And my to-do list, conquer and wipe out all the Canaanites. Number 4, settle all the people in the land, all right? Goes back to that idea about leading all these people and all of their issues, okay? And you can just imagine what that whole process might have been like. Number 5, follow Moses in leadership. Now, think about that. Of all the people to follow in leadership, would you want to be in Joshua's shoes and fill Moses' shoes? Here's this very iconic leader, powerful man, lead the people out of Egypt and towards the promised land. And here is Joshua's to-do list. How would you feel at those 5 tasks? It is very likely, just in his humanity. See, we often read these stories and they think, oh yeah, they trusted the Lord and they just did those things just automatically. It is very, very likely that in Joshua's humanity, he was filled with a deep sense of anxiety and fear. You don't say to a person 4 times, be strong and courageous, unless they're struggling with fear. Have you ever thought about that Joshua, the great military commander, dealt with fear? I think he had a deep sense of inadequacy. Hence the message, be strong and courageous, for I will be with you. And Joshua has a moment in which he has to choose. What am I going to do? How am I going to face this? And he responds. He can either choose to respond in fear and shrink back, or he can choose to respond by listening to God's message and trust and obey the Lord. And he responds by choosing that way, trusting, obeying the Lord in spite of his own fear. Have you ever been in a situation how hard it is to fight off your fear? It's not easy, is it? When you truly feel anxious and afraid, it's not easy to stand in front of that fear and choose to go a different route. But rather than let fear be the narrative of his life, Joshua made the choice to trust that God is with me just as he was with Moses, and I'm going to trust him. I'm going to believe that he's with me. Angela made a testimony last week. She said something very important in her testimony, if you happen to be here and you happen to listen to it. She talked about how she has a coworker that she would like to be able to minister to, and how the Lord brought this person's name to her mind, and how she drug her feet about the issue, not knowing how she might be received, uncertain about how this might go. Presence of fear, the presence of anxiety. But in trust and in faith, saying, God, this is what you have asked me to do. This is what I want to do. I'm going to trust you. In spite of my fear, I'm not going to allow fear to be the narrative of my life. Very, very small thing in one sense, but very dramatic and important. It might make the difference. It might make an eternal difference in the life of that individual. How we choose to deal with our fear can make a profound difference on the course and narrative of our life. Second one, don't let the book of the law depart from your mouth. On two occasions in chapter 9 and 24, Joshua reads, gathers the people together. See, God told him, don't let the book of the mouth depart, the book of the law depart from your mouth. And on two occasions, God gathers all the people of Israel, and he reads the whole book of the law to them. Twice he acts this out. Twice he works this in. Joshua was a man of the book. You know, we've done this story in large part to try to help us become people of the book, people who read the book and think about it and talk about it. And in one sense, this can help you become a person of the book. But still, you will have to choose. Am I going to be a man or a woman of the book of God, of the book of the law? See, I was thinking about this statement. Don't let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Interesting how God put that, isn't it? He could have said, don't let this book of the law depart from your memory. But he doesn't. He talks about the mouth. Why is that? And this is part of the reason why we have encouraged people to be part of our life application groups, is because we want you to not only read it, but then also talk about it. Talking about it helps internalize it. And that's what Joshua did. Don't let the book of the law depart from your mouth. He gathers the people and he reads the law in front of all of them. Two choices that Joshua made: to resist fear, to be strong and courageous, because he knew that Yahweh was with him. And secondly, he became a man of the book. Interesting question. What was the effect of Joshua's choices, of those two choices? Do you know at the very end of the book of Joshua how it ends? It ends with this: and Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua. How did they get there? They got there because Joshua made choices to be a man who would trust God in spite of his fear and to be a man of the book of the law. Second story here. This man by the name of Achan. If you read this story or know this story, of course, Achan had been told, all the people of Israel had been told, when you go into Jericho, after you kill everybody, everything that's left over, it has to be destroyed. You can't take any of it. It all has to be left right here. It has to be destroyed. And Achan saw a couple of things that he liked, and he grabbed them and got them back to his tent and hid them. And then the next story happens when they go against the city of Ai to destroy it, to conquer it. Israel is defeated and 3,000 people die. 3,000 warriors die as a result. And Joshua falls on his face and says, I don't know why. Why have we been defeated? And God says, stand up. There is sin. Israel has sinned. And they go through this process of selecting and finding out who it was who had done this deed. And it comes down to Achan. And Achan tells a story. We had that read earlier about how he confesses to what he had done. I made a list of all of the lessons that you can take from this story of Achan. I came up with at least 12 different things that you can learn from this story. And we're not going to cover all those, and you're glad for that. But let me mention two or three. Number one, Achan made a choice that happened in an instant. It happened in a blink of an eye. I highly doubt that Achan went into Jericho that morning thinking, I am going to steal something and bring it home to me. Well, bring it home with me. He heard the command that nothing was to be taken, that everything was to be destroyed. But in the heat of the moment, he says, I desired. I saw it and I desired it. And that's the way sin is, isn't it? Like, you don't get up in the morning and think, I'm gonna tell five people off today, do you? No, you get up in the morning, you think it's going to be a great day, and before you know it, you're in it, and you've said things that you don't even know why it's happening or how you've gotten there. It's just, it happens in an instant. It happens in a blink of an eye. Why? Because we desire things. We desire situations. We desire stuff. We desire to make certain situations to work in our favor. So much of our choices are instantaneous in nature. And we have to realize that all of us have a bit of Achan in us. You hear what I'm saying? We all have a bit of Achan in us. We have to admit, Lord, I saw. Lord, I desired. Lord, I coveted. Lord, I took. Lord, I hid it. See, here it is. Which reminds us of why being a person of the book is so critical and so important. Because in those moments, if you merely act on your impulse, you're going to find yourself into deep trouble. But in the moments, when the desire comes, if the book is with you in your mind and in your heart, if you have talked about it and you've meditated on it, it acts, and it's powerful in its effect in that it acts as a way of helping you think through your decisions. Happened in an instant. Lord, I saw it, I desired it, and I took it. See, here it is, hidden in my tent. And a lot of us, we have to admit, we have a lot of Achan in us, every one of us. Second thing is that this leads us to two very important effects that our choices have when it comes to sin. The first is that we have to decide then what to do with our sin. What did Achan decide to do with his stuff? He hid it in the ground, right? See, here it is, Lord. Here it is, hidden in the ground. Achan hid it until he was found out. But the Word of God tells us that we had better deal with our sin, or our sin will deal with us. You hear? You either deal with your sin, or your sin will deal with you. You either destroy sin, or your sin will destroy you. There's only one way that that can go, and that's why Jesus says to you, if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. You better deal with it, otherwise it will deal with you. The second effect is that sin not only has an effect on you, but it affects all of those around you. See, when the Israelites were defeated and Joshua said, I don't know what happened, God said, stand up, Israel has sinned. Now, isn't that interesting? That God said Israel has sinned. He does not say Achan sinned. 3,000 men die as a result of this man's choice. Sin is always communal. Now, we Americans have a very hard time with this. We think so individually, so me only, we do not understand how sin is communal. But your sin and my sin affect one another. And of course, you know this. Whenever you sin, whenever you choose, how many lives it begins to touch. How much destruction can come as a result of this. And that's why God is saying Israel has sinned. He's trying to teach the people of Israel, when you sin, everybody is affected. And of course, that comes in so many deep ways. So here was Achan. He was an insider, part of the community, part of the covenant nation. He made a choice in the blink of an eye that brought down the whole community. It destroyed him, and it destroyed his family. Achan was an insider. He had all the privileges and the access to the blessings that God had given to the nation. But because he failed to trust God, because he disobeyed, he was destroyed. A choice that was made that had dramatic effect on him and on others around him. But Rahab, now she was an outsider. She was an outsider ethnically. She was an outsider morally. She was an outsider covenantally. Rahab is the last person that you should possibly think could have any access to the blessings of God. Can you see that? She had absolutely no claim whatsoever on the promises or the blessings of Yahweh. Here was God had made this nation. You're going to be my chosen people. Through you, the nations will be blessed. But these promises were made to Abraham and his family. Rahab has no claim on any of that. She's an outsider in every sense of the word. And she is as good as dead, and she knows it. But she makes a choice. And the choice that Rahab makes is truly, truly, I hope you'll get this, truly stunning. And we need to make our way a little bit through what was happening and what was really going on as she made her choice. She's a prostitute. She takes in these two spies. She hides them. She deflects their pursuers. She makes a request of them, and she makes a covenant commitment to them. That's the framework. Now listen to what's involved in this choice. Rahab had to go against her own community in order to do all that. All right? She's a Jerichoite in the town of, in the city of Jericho. And she had to choose between her community and the community of Israel. In other words, she had to go against conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom was stay inside the walls of the city, bar it all up, close the gate, no one goes in, no one goes out. We rest on the defenses of our walls, and we hope that we can hold off Joshua. You put your trust in the walls. You put your trust and your confidence in the capacity of the way that your city is built. Know that the city was very fortified. That's conventional wisdom. And Rahab had to go against that whole idea in her choice. She had to take her whole life and her whole family is at stake on the hope of deliverance through the word of Joshua. You see, Rahab has to stake her whole family's existence on the word of Joshua, a man she's never met, who's outside, who she knows is coming. She had heard, just heard, not seen, but had heard the reports about Yahweh and how he had delivered the people of Israel from Egypt and rescued them out of Egypt and brought them through the Red Sea on dry land and had brought them. She had heard all of that. She had expressed in the passage, she expresses her own faith in Yahweh as being the God of heaven and the God of earth. She recognizes that. She understood that her city was under a curse and that the curse of judgment and destruction was coming and that everyone would perish. She understood that the options were only either to stake her life on the city's defenses or make terms of peace, to seek God's mercy and deliverance from death. And because of her choice, her life was spared and her family was saved. And amazingly, she gets in the family tree of Jesus. Now, I want to ask you a question. Does that storyline seem at all familiar to you? Think about that again. Does that storyline that I just told seem familiar to you? Do you and I realize that we are exactly Rahab? We are outsiders as well. We are outsiders ethnically and covenantally. We have absolutely no standing, no claim on the promises that God made to Abraham. That's to him and his family. We have no way of getting into those under those blessings. We are outsiders morally. We have prostituted ourselves by serving other gods. The sentence of death and destruction hangs over our city. The only options are to stand with the city or to come to terms of peace with God. To have God's blessing, you must go against conventional wisdom. The wisdom of you can... That's true for you, but I make up my own truth. The wisdom of there's many, many ways to get to God. To seek his mercy, we have to turn to him, and ultimately, that mercy is ultimately found in Jesus, who suffered your death and destruction on a cross so that you might live. And if that happens in your life, amazingly, you get brought into the family tree of Jesus. Your testimony, if you are in Christ Jesus, is the exact same testimony as Rahab. And she made a choice. And if your choice is to stay with conventional wisdom, to stay with the city, you are under the sentence of destruction and death. Then there's Caleb. Caleb comes to Joshua and reminds him of his actions in the incident of going into the promised land. Caleb was one of the two spies. He and Joshua had said, we can take the land, and the other 10 spies spread this false report, and so they don't take the land. They're sent back out to the wilderness for 40 years, and Caleb comes back to Joshua, and he says, Moses made me a promise. He's 85 years old now, and he has a vision of the unfulfilled promise that the Lord had given. He says, the Lord kept me alive these 45 years while Israel was in the wilderness, and now I'm 45 years old. I am as strong today as I was in that day when Moses sent me. My strength now is as my strength was then, for war and for going and coming. So now give me this hill country of which the Lord spoke on that day, how the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall drive them out, as the Lord says. And that's exactly what Caleb did. I I want to speak to all of us, but I speak in part to those of you who are older than me. Those of you who are in the latter part of your life. There's a narrative in America, and that narrative is simply that work hard to get to a point where you can coast, where you can retire and you can live the kind of life that you would like to have lived when you were younger. Caleb is a man who will not let us think that way. What hills? Do you hear what he said? He says, he says, give me the hill country, and I will drive them out. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out. Let me ask you this. What hills do you have in your life that you need to take? What hills do you need to say to God, God, give me this hill? It may be that you will be with me, and I will be able to fight this battle that you are putting before me, whatever that might be. The choice is to reject an American version of the late years, and those of us who are still working who are thinking about those late years, and to choose a completely different way of life. Fruitful years of ministry, of battle, of service. Which leads me to another person, Jesus. Do you know that Jesus can be seen in all of these people? Jesus chose to be strong and courageous in spite of incredible forces that stood against him. He chose to not let the book of the law depart from his mouth. He chose to resist the temptation to take the devoted things. He stood on that in that desert, and the devil came to him and says, I'll give you everything if you'll bow down to serve me. And Jesus chose to resist the temptation to take the devoted things. He trusted God like Rahab in the face of destruction, even though it meant his own destruction. And like Caleb, he took the ultimate hill when he climbed that hill of Calvary. In the Gospels, it says Jesus set his face to go to Jerusalem, making his way up that hill to take that hill so you and I could sit here, know that we're forgiven. In every place, and particularly in the garden, he chose his Father's will over his own, so that we could be brought in. Which brings me finally to the people. At the end of the book, Joshua gathers the people and he recounts their history. And then he says, choose this day whom you will serve, those very well-known verses. If you think it evil to serve the Lord, then choose what God you will serve. And the people renew the covenant and they say, we will serve the Lord. And Joshua takes a stone, a large stone, it says, and he puts it under this tree. And he says, this stone is a witness of the choice that you have made today, of your agreement to follow the Lord today. There's a couple of buckets in this room with stones in it. Maybe it's possible that you need to make a choice, some choice that God is bringing to mind. And you don't need another rock, I'm sure, in your house, but you might need a stone in your life that says, on this day, on November 22nd, 2020, I made this choice. Here's some possible ways. I want to choose today to be strong and courageous and not a person of fear and anxiety. I want to choose today to not let this book of the law depart from my mouth. I am going to be a person of the book, and I'm going to figure out a way to make this book more central to who I am. I have got hidden sin in my life, and I need to deal with that. It's going to deal with me if I don't deal with it. I need to go against conventional wisdom and embrace the God of Scripture who offers mercy through Jesus. I need to make that choice today. I have got mixed up priorities, and I need to change some of my priorities so that the trajectory of my life is altered. I have a hill I want to take for God's glory. Maybe there's something else that I haven't listed. But these characters show us in the book of Joshua moments of decision, moments of choice that had profound and radical impact on them as individuals as well as on the community. And we're still talking about those choices today. So in the next 2 minutes, just in quietness, with no sound or no song, I invite you, if the Lord has spoken to you, and if you are saying, God, I choose today, and you fill in the blank, I invite you to go pick up a rock, take it home with you, and seal that and say, this rock is a covenant witness of the choice I've made and how I'm responding to the Lord today. Just quietly for the next minute or so, and then Rye will come and lead us in our final song.